on this episode because it's a title and they're going to do it for a reason, whether it's someone personal or somebody
they know
or themselves, and they're going to listen to this and be like, so thankful that we're being open and honest and actually breaking stigmas as well.
And that's what I've sort of put in my notes, is like the reason of sharing and the reason why I'm now just being like, you know what, fuck it if people are going to judge me, because no one knew what I was going through, because no one knew that when you're pregnant, you're supposed to be super happy and everything is la la la. Mm-hmm. And it's just not the case all the time.
Happy Friday, everybody. It's your girl from Keep Your Juno podcast. I'm Zana.
And I'm Jessica.
It's actually Zana. It's not Zana.
Oh, my God. It's so funny.
But we're here adding some more flavor to your Friday. So welcome.
Welcome.
Today we have an exciting episode, as we do every single week. But this one's carrying on with our mental health series, and we're going to be talking to Luce. She is a POM. She is in the UK in this episode. So she has taken time out of her very, very busy schedule to talk to us very late on a Wednesday evening. But we're going to be talking about pre and postnatal depression and basically her journey through that. We're going to talk about a few things before the episode starts, as basically we chat to her about her journey. We don't really go into much about what pre and postnatal depression is. So we're just going to quickly go over that now. So just a trigger warning as well in here, if anyone has suffered from pre and postnatal depression, there are some pretty heavy topics and some heavy discussions in this episode. There is also talk of miscarriage and loss of children. So if you experience any of those and kind of just want to take a step back today, that is okay. And you can take this one and you can sit this one out.
Yeah.
So I guess we're going to cover just basically what postnatal depression is. There is pre and postnatal depression, but prenatal depression happens before you actually, I guess, have the baby, and it can be either before you conceive or like the kind of the start of conceiving your baby. And there can be some things that come up through that, which Luce has experienced and goes through. Mm-hmm. And then you can get perinatal depression, which covers the entire, I guess, pregnancy from conception to when your child is 1 year old. So you can have perinatal depression across the whole entire time, mm-hmm. or there is postnatal depression, which comes after the baby is born. So we're just going to run over a few things, of what postnatal depression is first.
For starters, it's actually the number one complication of pregnancy, which is mind-blowing because no one talks about it.
Yeah.
It's the number one.
You're just expected to get on with it. You're expected, you're a mum. This is an exciting thing for you. Why are you sad? Like, you've just brought this life into this world.
Yeah.
But you can have other feelings other than joy. Like, obviously people are joyous that they have a baby, but there's other things that can happen, and we need to create space for that to be talked about.
Crazy amount of emotions that go along.
Yeah.
And stats show that only 15% receive help. And that's because of this stigma behind it. Because like, they feel like they can't talk about it to friends, to family, to colleagues, to a therapist, and people are not getting their help. And they're only coming out like years and years and years later, talking about this really horrible period of their life. And then they feel so much better after they've spoken about it. But during that actual time that they needed help, that critical help, they just were too ashamed.
Yeah. And it can leave mothers and children like scarred for a very long time. And it can scare people off having children again because they don't like the way that it makes them feel. And I think what I watched recently was on You Can't Ask That on the ABC iView. And there is one specifically on pre and postnatal depression. And I encourage anyone listening to this to go and watch that, because that is basically an eyewitness to people who have gone through this. And there's a lot of people that on there that say people assume that it's you hating your baby and you don't feel this connection to this baby and you want to get rid of this baby and you just have bad thoughts about the baby. And the most important thing that I learned from that episode is actually it's the opposite. It's actually people and mothers don't feel good enough. They don't feel like they provide enough. They don't feel like they're being a good enough mom, that they think it's better if they take themselves out of the equation rather than taking the baby out of the equation. The baby is not the problem. It's actually how they feel in themselves as mothers that they're not competent enough. They're not doing a good enough job. And that in itself is so scary, thinking that you're not a good enough mom, because you want to give your child the best life. So the guilt and the shame that surrounds that is huge.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just something that we need to discuss. And we were so lucky to have had this platform today. But we're just going to run through a few things that are on BetterHealth on the Victoria website. So A new mother can develop postnatal depression within a few days or weeks after giving birth. Around 1 in 7 to 10 mothers develop PND, so postnatal depression. Postnatal depression can range from a mild feeling of sadness to a paralyzing depression. The exact causes of PND are not known, but the enormous physical, emotional, and social changes involved in becoming a parent seems to play a significant role. Partners can play a big role in helping a woman to recover from PND. And also something interesting that I learned, and it's also on here, is that fathers or partners can also develop PND, particularly if the partner is depressed. And there was actually a man on the pre and postnatal depression You Can't Ask That episode. And he was saying how much he experienced postnatal depression. So it's not just women. Women do experience it more because of the change of hormones and the huge waves that happen. But men can also feel incompetent too, and partners can feel incompetent too. So we also need to remember that.
Yeah. There are a few websites you can go on to. So we got Beyond Blue website is really great, as well as Panda and Raising Children Network. You do obviously have a midwife that's there to support you during the antenatal periods, and you do the Edinburgh Postnatal Depression Score. But I know from talking to a lot of people with postnatal depression that they say that they lied on that score system. Wow. Because it's just a little sheet where you circle like between like 0 and 5 or 0 and 10. I know it's a scoring system, yeah, about how you're feeling. So some people feel too much shame circling what they really feel.
Yeah.
So it's just more, it's actually the conversation that we, yes, need to have, not just a piece of paper where you circle something. You actually need to have a conversation.
Just ask someone if they've had a new baby. I know the first thing you ask is, oh, how's your baby? Like, how are they going? How do they sleep? Are they doing well? Like, blah, blah, blah. Ask the parent how they are as well.
Yeah, go, how are you going?
Yeah.
How are you?
It's a huge change. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 kids in every single time is different, and it's a change every single time. So just reach out to a friend that's had a baby and ask how they are.
Yeah.
Ask how their partner is. And hopefully we can try and get rid of the stigma that's attached to this.
Absolutely. But before we get into the, yes, episode, we're going to just like bring it back a little bit. Ooh, and la, we're going to let you know a little bit about our lives.
Hi.
Hi. Shall I start?
My, yeah, spill
the,
yeah,
tea.
Yeah.
We're going to do our spill the tea. We love this. This,
yeah,
is a favorite segment. So I had a crazy situation happen. I did an extra shift on the Sunday at our local hospital here in Brizzy. And I normally do a recovery setting, and I just thought, you know, I want to get back on the ward, get me some extra moolah, you know, get it back out there. And I had a assistant nurse with me watching some of my patients, and she was adorable. I like always, you know, introduce myself. I was like, I'm Jess. I'm going to be the nurse looking after these patients. If you need me, just shout out. It had been about like 3 or 4 hours into my shift, and I had said something, and then something just clicked in her. And she just goes, your name's Jess, right? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, you have a podcast. And I was like, yes. And she goes, keep your gin up podcast. And I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. And she's like, oh my God. Like, I have listened to every single episode. And this is the wildest thing, right? So we end up going like in the tea room and having a good chat about it. She literally showed me her Spotify, and she has listened to every single episode, and it just made my heart so warm. And the fact is, she doesn't even have us on social media. She doesn't have our Instagram account. She doesn't have our Facebook, you know, or anything. So she doesn't even know what we look like. She recognized my voice, which is even crazier.
Yeah.
I was like, what? 4 hours of me just chatting, because obviously I talk a lot. And she's literally had this like thought in her head being like, where do I know that voice? Where is it? And then just connected the dots. So that was, wow, so cool. So Emma, huge shout out. It literally made my month. Seriously. I was like, oh my God, people actually listen.
Yeah. If anyone else out there actually wants a shout out from us, just give us a voice memo. Send us a message. You also go on the draw to win some monthly prizes. If no one's seen those on our Instagram, we're actually doing monthly prizes for people who write in, people who send us questions, people who send us voice memos, anything like that. If you write in a question box, you go on the draw to win some monthly prizes. We've got some exciting things happening. We've got lots of merch on the way, and you get a cute little gin in there too. So why not?
Do it, guys. And we love a chat. So that voice memo thing,
we love it.
Instagram or Messenger or anything like that, we just love it so much. We voice memo each other, our friends, everybody. Yes. We're obsessed with that little icon. Yeah. So just flick one over.
Yeah. And if anyone is listening that doesn't follow our social media and has listened to every single episode, get your phone out right now and you type in at Keep Your Gin Up Podcast on Instagram and you follow that little page right now, okay?
Yeah. We also have Facebook as well. So yes. We do forget to mention that.
We do.
So yeah. And you can actually see what we look like.
Yeah. I mean, we don't look great right now, but I promise on social media, we try to look better.
Yeah.
We keep it real.
We up the game on social media.
But we are real gals. Yeah. Now, real faces
I
right now.
It's time for your spill the tea,
yeah.
Yours is a bit of a wild
mine's an interesting one. So, for anyone who has been listening along, I am doing my sexology degree. So, basically, to become a sexologist. And I had an intensive week at uni. So, I had to fly to Sydney for 4 days to do basically 4 days intensive sex training and learning. And it was actually
AKA porn.
Yeah. It was actually bloody epic. The chats that we had were so great. It was basically like doing this podcast, but for 4 days straight. We were just having such open chats about sexuality and sex and how we approach relationships. And we're actually going to do an episode solely dedicated to the things that I've learned through my course so far in our next series, which is going to be a sex series, because I've learned so much and I can't give it all in the spill the tea. But the funniest spill the tea was our last topic for the day was watching an hour and a half documentary on BDSM porn. And it was like from the aspect of BDSM porn, like it was behind the scenes, watching the porn that they make, talking to the producers, all this stuff. And this was the last thing on our Thursday evening before we all left for the day. So it was very interesting. All of this had led up to this one documentary, and there was one man, but sitting with about 30 women and two men, the professor as well, watching a BDSM porn documentary was extremely interesting.
How uncomfortable.
Not something that, you know, turned me on, because BDSM, it kind of made me flinch, if anything.
But, I did ask Zana, I was like, did you get a little horny?
I mean, there was parts of it where I was like, oh, that's interesting. But like the flogging and stuff, it was severe flogging, and that was a bit much for me. No harm for anyone who does that out there. Like, keep it safe, keep it clean. But for me, I was just, it caused a lot of pain in my brain to happen. But yeah, that's my spill the tea for this week. It was an interesting one. I definitely learned a friggin' lot from that week, and I can't wait to share it with you all. But yeah, if anyone just feels like, you know, spending an hour and a half watching BDSM porn, it was interesting.
Yeah.
I'll try and find the link for you if you want it.
Yeah, I kind of want to watch it too. But yeah, so after our mental health series has ended, we do have some juicy episodes. We've interviewed a sex worker, a male sex worker.
Yummy.
I know, everyone wants that episode, but you just have to wait.
Yeah.
And we've got we've got so many sex-related episodes actually coming, and stay tuned.
Yeah, we've got good. Some sex and sexuality. We've got some maybe some pelvic floor physios on there, maybe mm-hmm. something about how you access sexual health services or sexual therapy.
We're thinking about period sex segment, understanding, you know, pros and cons of period sex and how to communicate that.
Yeah.
So much.
And I guess like sex really is the starting point of having a baby, which is leading us into our episode today. Mm. So it's all linked. It's a circle of life.
It is circle of life.
And we hope you guys enjoy it.
All right. Bye. Bye.
Good morning, guys. We are joined with Luz. How are you going this morning, girl?
Good. And it's evening for me.
Yeah. Where are you?
Yeah. I say London, but I'm not at the moment. I'm down south, down in Devon, down in a sunny part.
Is it sunny?
England, yeah.
I don't know if it's sunny, eh?
No, I'm just saying sunny in case up there hears me.
Trying to make you feel better.
Some sunshine tomorrow. I've got 2 acres of grass for these kids to run around in. Please give me some sun.
Yes, the sun's just creeping out for us today as well, which is actually so nice. It's been so cold, but there's a bit of sun. So there's some light for the day.
We struggle too here in Aussie town.
You say so cold, but I lived in Perth for 6 years and so cold was 18 degrees, which is why it was hot the other day. I got burned.
Oh my God. That's horrific.
That's wild. I don't think I could survive.
The UK is a bit much for me.
We actually have our electric blankets plugged into the wall right now on our laps. We have one each.
Honestly. I had an electric blanket when I was in Australia and I thought, what is happening to me? I've climatized way too quickly.
Love it. So tell us a little bit about you. You obviously lived in Australia at one point and now you're back in the UK. How did that all kind of transpire?
Yeah, so me and my husband literally, tell me the real story.
Yeah.
We watched Bondi Rescue a little bit too much.
Oh my God.
That's so funny.
To go to Bondi Beach for New Year's Eve. Oh my God, 2013, I like got a mega paycheck from a job that I was in. It was like $3,000 commission paycheck. And I literally walked into a travel agent and was like, I want to go to Australia with my husband, or no, was my boyfriend at the time. I want to do New Year's Eve, Sydney. Yeah, we're going to do it for 2.5 weeks. And they were like, that's like £55 million. Like, it's so ridiculously expensive. And I was like, fine, take all my money. We're going to, and we were also addicted to Neighbours and Home and Away.
So oh, wow. Like,
we're going to go and see it all and it's going to be so amazing. And I don't even think I stepped on Bondi Beach. I think I just looked and I was like, there's a bar there. Can we just go and sit in there and drink? And I'll just look at the beach. And I was like, because it's so hot and it's so busy. And then I just went in to like spot the lifeguards. But then we flew home and then we were like, England, shit. Shall we move to Australia? And we were like, yeah, but we weren't a massive fan of Sydney because it was a little bit like London, but really hot.
It's chaotic too.
And yeah, it was a bit wild. We were a bit over the city life. Mm. We visited Perth for like a few days on the way just to like break up the trip. And we decided to go to Perth. We literally just packed up and went out on a working holiday visa. Both landed jobs within a week and stayed for 6 years.
Wow. Yeah. I'm from Perth originally. It's so beautiful. Like, I love the beaches. It's like really chill.
We're in the hills as well. So we were like really like, which was, you know, I do like being near the water. But I love being in the forest more. Yeah.
The hills are beautiful. Oh, I love Perth. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It. Yeah. And so what made you go back to the UK then? Were you guys didn't have children when you guys were in Australia then? It was just you guys together?
Yeah, so we didn't. And then we had Parker. And when Parker just turned one, we moved back to the UK. Mm-hmm. We moved back because I felt like we needed to be near a family and I felt like we needed the support because we didn't really have, in my head, we didn't have any support. Actually, we had probably more support there than we had here. But at the time, I was like, we're going to go back to England. We'd been back for a holiday and it was the best thing in the world. And we thought that was what life was going to be like. Yep. So we decided that we had the first grandchild in the family. We needed to come home. My mum had just recovered from breast cancer. So I was like, I want to go home. I want to be closer to family. You know, it's going to be amazing. We've got residency. So if we want to go back, it's fine. Parker's a citizen. It's all good. So we moved back.
How many years ago was that now?
That was 3-4 years ago. Mm-hmm. 2019. Mm. Yeah, 2019 we moved back.
Nice.
And that was the start of the downhill spiral for me. That was the trigger.
That was.
Mm. Without realizing, that was the trigger.
Mm.
It like set off a catalyst of so many events.
Yep.
That led to a lot of things.
All right. Before we get into the juicy details of that, we're just going to get your spill the tea of this week because we need something fun to, you know, start the day.
Mm. We love it. And we're drinking tea at the moment too.
Well, I've just had a vodka orange just to like, you know, after being attacked by the goose. I spilled the tea this week. Oh my God, it's awful. my daughter, she's 4, has learnt the word fucking hell, mum. Fucking hell. And she says she didn't used to say it so much. But of course, now I'm at my mum's and people are listening. She says it all the time and she said it in the car. It was yesterday. Someone cut me up. She went, oh, fucking hell. And I was
You're like accurate, but don't say that.
She's using it the right way.
Every time. She says it in like she dropped something and she said it. And I was like, she's using it in the right way. And it's so hard to be mad because it's so funny. Like it's so innocent. And for a long time, so she's been doing this for a little while, but just not as much. We've just ignored it. We're just like, just going to ignore it. Because if we make out a big deal, she's an arsehole. Yeah. So she'll just literally not stop saying it. Mm-hmm. So I've said, Parker, that word is not a nice word to use. So we've got to change it. And she says, what should I say, mum? And I couldn't think of what else to say because I literally say that word all the time. So I said, we're going to say cor blimey. And she went, what? I was like, we're going to go, oh, cor blimey. And now she says it with like a really strong Cockney accent and she isn't Cockney at all.
Oh my God. Wow. When she goes to school, she's going to keep saying it and they're all going to think that she's like, yeah, some Cockney kid.
Well, at daycare, they rung me when I picked her up from daycare and they said she's been singing a song which isn't appropriate. And I was like, oh, she watches TikTok, but you know the A, B, C, D, E, F, U song?
Oh.
And she knows it off by heart. And she didn't really know it, but she sort of mumbles it. And she's like, oh, fuck off. And she says that at the top of her lungs.
Oh, my God. At daycare.
I listened to them. I was like, yeah. And I was like, yes, we know. And we don't tell her off because then she knows that it's bad. And we were like, oh, okay. And I was like, you guys might not approve of my parenting, but oh well.
Oh my God, that's 100% going to be my kid. 100%. My kid's going to be like dancing to all the TikTok songs, like know all the songs, and we're like, oh God.
Oh no.
The radio in the morning, she's like, oh, Mom, it's TikTok song. Mom, it's TikTok song. It's not like Justin Bieber or Harry Styles. She's like, Mom, it's TikTok. Mom, it's TikTok. I'm like, yep,
oh
I know.
Oh my God. So funny how they associate that.
Kids are a crack up, man. Oh my God.
They're so smart.
Oh, so smart.
Oh,
scarily smart.
Scary, yeah. That's a good ability. I like that one.
I love the one. My kids are totally going to do that if I have kids one day. 100%.
So you have more than one kid?
I'm secretly proud of it. Two kids.
You got two. Okay.
I have Parker and Bella. Parker is 4 mm-hmm. and Bella is 2.5.
Oh, nearly cute. 3. That's adorable.
Mm. That sounds busy.
Yeah.
Sounds very busy.
Very busy.
Yeah.
Very wild.
Yes. I guess we want to dive deep into, I guess, your journey into motherhood. Yeah. Like when you guys were in Australia and you guys were together living your best life in Perth, did you guys plan? Were you like, okay, let's be in Australia. Let's start to have, like, let's have a family now. Was it a little bit of a surprise?
Definitely a surprise. So okay. We got married in 2016.
Yeah.
And after we got married, so I was always, growing up, I was like, you go to school, you go to uni, you get a good job, you find a husband, you get married, and then you buy a house, and then you have the kids. Mm-hmm. Like that's how my parents did it. That's how everyone does it. But we had good jobs, didn't have a career, but I actually fell pregnant. So I've actually been pregnant 3 times. We lost our first one. We fell pregnant, I think it was New Year's Eve. And I found out quite quickly because I don't know, I was just really in tune with my body. In Australia, I was super healthy and I was just really in tune with everything. And we lost that bubby on Australia Day. Mm-hmm. So actually, I was not too traumatized by it. My husband was. But I don't know. I just, it didn't affect me in the way that many people are affected. Mm-hmm. It was the whole process that was, I was starting to bleed quite heavily. We were in Kalbarri.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like 6 hours from Perth and it was 3 hours from a hospital.
Wow.
So I was like bleeding quite heavily and I sort of knew what was going on. Hubby was like, no, it's fine. You've got twins in there. One's just falling out. We're fine. Like that in his head, that's what was going on. And I was like, okay, hun, that's not, but okay. And I was just in serious pain for the whole like public holiday weekend. Obviously everything's shut. Because it's Australia Day and everyone wants to drink and party. And I was just in like bad period pains. And we drove then all the way back down to Perth, got an emergency, I think it was a Sunday, emergency appointment at, I can't remember what hospital it was.
Would have been June, like campus maybe, or?
No, it was in the city.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. I can't remember which one it was. Yeah. And they said, the scan, they said, they couldn't do something or something that day because it was a Sunday and it was shut or whatever. So I went back in the next day and they were like, yeah, you're losing baby. Give it a week and you'll all be good. Gave it a week. Wasn't good. So I've been bleeding 2 weeks then.
Wow.
And then we went in, they were like, right, you can either take this pill or have this operation. And so I went for the operation. It cost me $1,000 because I was not a resident at that point.
Wow.
And I remember being like, wow, this is quite a serious. And obviously for me in the UK, our healthcare is free.
Yeah.
It's quite wild for me to be like, oh, wow. Okay. Like this is something I can't avoid. And I've $1,000 in the end. I was like, okay, that's like quite wild. But I recovered like quite well from it. And as I said, I wasn't too, it was very early on. I think I was only about 5 or 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then we got pregnant with Parker in the May. Mm-hmm. So it was a surprise, but I was okay with it. So I found out we were pregnant with Parker as we flew back to the UK, and we'd actually flown back because at the time of being back, my mum had been diagnosed with breast cancer. Mm-hmm. So I saw the loss of baby one as a blessing, because had we not lost baby one, I wouldn't have been there to support my mum through that news and through that time. But yeah, then we found out we were pregnant with Parker. So we kept that quite under wraps for a while, and had her in Perth, had an emergency C-section, had her. And again, not too traumatic. It was just kind of like, I very much rolled into it. Like, do you have a birth plan? I was like, just get it out.
I love that.
My birth plan is just get it out and give me all the drugs. That's all, yeah. That's all, yeah. I want. Give me all the drugs. But I remember going into labor, like my waters hadn't broke, but the pain started, and I called the hospital, and they were like, every hospital in WA is on bypass because everyone seemed to have babies that day. And they were like, could you just have a bath and wait?
Oh,
and
I was
like,
God, this baby is coming out. What?
What? I was like, are you joking me? And I was like, this is getting worse. And I was like, okay, I'll just go back into bed. I'll wake my husband up. And it was, we ended up going in, and they gave me a Panadol or something and sent me home. Mm-hmm. And that like slowed it all down. So we went to the pub.
Oh, wow. Oh my God.
Palmy and chips.
An apple palmy,
like, palmy and chips. Yeah. And I was like, palmy and chips and a Coke, and we'll go back home. We'll finish watching Wentworth. And then my waters broke while we were watching Wentworth. And my husband, I remember standing up and they broke. And my husband was like, have you just wet yourself? And I was like, mm-hmm. No. It's happening. And hilariously, like, I waddled to the toilet and he was there mopping and like cleaning up the carpets. It didn't stay.
Like in the movies.
Bless him.
Love that. I love this guy already.
So yeah. Yeah. And then we like went to, again, I can't even remember what hospital it was, in the city, and ended up having to have an emergency C-section because she got stuck. So the doctors have said, like, my pelvis didn't move or something didn't happen. So she wasn't coming out and her heart rate was dropping. So,
yeah.
And the C-section was my biggest fear because stitches, like, oh, I being sewn up while I was awake made me feel like Frankenstein. And I literally just, like, I couldn't even get my head around it. I just could not understand how people are cut open while they're awake.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found out I wasn't even stitched, I was stapled, which made me feel even more Frankenstein like and I walked like a 90 year old lady, because in my head, if I stood up straight, they all ripped out and everything would fall back out again.
No one mentally prepares you, eh?
No.
No one prepares you for that. So and the midwife recorded it, and it's on my husband's phone still, and like, I still have not watched it. Like, he was like, it was gruesome.
My friend had a baby like 2 days ago, and she wanted to watch the birth. So she was having a Caesar, and they put a camera over her, and they put a screen in front of her, and she watched her baby be born from the other side.
I was like, don't put that baby on me. I was like, clean it up. clean it up, stitch me up. I was like, don't give it to me. Like, you go do what you need to do, then sort this out. And then come give it to me when I'm ready. And they were
That's
like,
hilarious.
Are you sure? I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, don't put a baby on me while all my guts are also still lying on the table. Just put it back.
Oh, my God. That is the best.
And I'm like, so okay. Funny.
God, that's so funny. I would have cracked it if I was in that theater with you. I'm like, no worries. I'll get all the slime and juices off for you.
Yeah, I was like, you just take it away and do that thing and just stitch me up so I can just then sort myself out.
Yeah, bring it back when it's all please. Cute and clean.
Yeah.
So how was the experience, with your first baby? Like, when you first got her on you, like, what kind of, did this process start then, or did it not start straight away?
did not start straight away. So my pregnancy with Parker was like, you know, I just kept saying, oh, I'm going on maternity leave soon. I'm going on maternity leave soon. It was never like, I'm having a baby soon. It never really ticked that I was having a baby. And I don't know if that was a mental wall I put up because we lost the first, or whether I wasn't ready, or I don't know, but I wasn't like, I didn't do bump pictures. I didn't do bump things. I didn't do like, I love my baby. And I didn't do all of that. I just pretty much just was like normal until I couldn't be normal anymore because everything was swollen. And
yeah.
And when I had her, I was in hospital for 4 or 5 days, which was okay, except I just couldn't process like moving again and what had happened, because I've got Crohn's disease. So I'd had a right hemicolectomy when I was 18, so I had a massive scar on my stomach already, and I'd been through like major surgery, and this for me was just like, whoa, this wasn't how it was. And the one thing I found, so in in Australia compared to the UK, because I had Bella here, they really pushed breastfeeding on me in Australia, like really pushed it. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, like I'll give it a go. But I was so sore and so like, what the fuck is going on? I really struggled to breastfeed and I couldn't get up and out of bed. I couldn't pick her up. So I kept having to like call for the midwife and be like, oh, she's hungry. Can you put her on me? And I don't know what I'm doing here. Can you like put my boob in its mouth? Because I don't really know what I'm doing. And it just felt... Well, I said to my husband, I think it was day 3 or 4, I was like, I'm resenting this baby because the only time people give me the baby is when she's hungry. I'm not getting any of the nice cuddles like you're all getting. I don't want to breastfeed. I want to give her a bottle. I need a sleep. I need a rest. I'm sore because I couldn't like hold her like this. I had to hold her like a rugby ball, which felt really weird. And I remember saying to the midwife, like, I want to give her a bottle. I had to sign like a piece of paper. And I was like, what year are we living in? This is wild. But she was a really older lady. And then I had like a really young midwife and she was super cool. Like she was so like chilled and understanding. She's like, yep, we'll make you up a bottle. Don't worry. So I was quite like, and everywhere I went in Oz with her, everyone was like, you breastfeeding? You breastfeeding? You breastfeeding? And it made me really resent it. So I, the only thing with Parker, my first baby, that's the only struggle I had was the breastfeeding. I had no postnatal depression, no prenatal depression, nothing with her. I had the baby blues, like the crying for absolutely no reason on day 3. Like my husband would be like, why are you crying again? And I was like, I don't know. Like, and all the like, parts of having a C-section after 6 hours of trying to push her out. But otherwise, like, she was such a babe. She slept all the time. She regularly fed. Like, my husband did loads of night feeds. Like, he was really on top of things because he was a greenkeeper. So he was, like, up at 4 o'clock in the morning. So he'd do that first feed. And then I'd sleep in and then he'd be back by midday. So it was really good. So I never struggled with her. And I was like, and I remember telling all my friends, like when I was pregnant, I was like, I'm just going to live my life totally as I normally do. She's going to fit into my schedule. And they're all like laughing in my face. She legit fitted in my schedule. Like she was like, I could just take her anywhere. And she was so chilled and she was so, everybody loved her and she would go to everybody and she could be looked after by everybody. And it was so good, which is why when we had Bella, it really slapped me in the face because I was not expecting it. I was like, yeah, I'm a good mum. This stuff is easy. So yeah. So with her, like literally no struggles.
Yeah.
Nothing at all. Apart from the C-section recovery. And that was literally it.
Yeah.
But we had Bella in the UK and, that was a very, very, very different experience.
Yeah, talk us through that.
So with Bella, so I found out I was pregnant with Bella 6 days before we left Australia to move back to the UK. Wow. Yeah. I just hit this major milestone in my business. So I was in network marketing at the time. I just hit like the top position in the company. And it was like, I was drinking like vodka orange juices, like 5 or 6 a day, like for a week, because it was wild. And we were in Coogee and we were in an Airbnb and it was like party life. And Parker had just turned one. So my plan was that babies would be 3 or 4 years apart.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the case. So I found out I'd missed my period, and I was like, no,
not again.
No. Not again. So me and my husband were going down to Geraldton to visit a friend to sort of like say goodbye and spend like some time down there. And we stopped off at the services and I was like, I've got to fucking do a test because it's driving me mental. Like, I've got to go and do one. So I literally was like, I just went to Coles, got a test, and I did it in the service station. Didn't even tell him. Mm-hmm. And I remember it being hilarious. I had to take Parker with me. And in that service station, they had this like seat that you strap your kid in so you can pee. Oh. Best thing I've ever seen in my life. Like a car seat in the cubicle. So I could strap her in and go to the toilet and not worry about it.
They need to start utilizing them more.
I need that in my house.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I need in my house. So I remember strapping her in there. I remember taking a photo of her strapped into this thing so I could have a wee and do the test. And it came back as positive, and I just remember going, fuck, what are we going to do? Oh, my God. So my plan, first thing was like, how the hell am I going to tell my husband we're pregnant again? Because I know he'll be super excited, and I just felt absolute dread.
Yeah.
And in the car, we were driving back, and I sort of told him, and he was like, oh, okay. He's like, oh, that's cool. He's like, how do you feel? And I was like, still a bit numb at the moment. Not too sure how I'm feeling. And I just sort of like was like, well, I'll process this in a bit. But the I then went and got the test that was like, told you how many weeks you were. And so I found out I was pregnant with Parker like 5 days after falling pregnant, like so soon.
Jesus, you are in tune with your body, aren't you?
But this one was like 5-6 weeks. So I was quite gone. In my head, I was quite gone because I had first pregnancy, we found out 10 days into pregnancy. So like everything was quite early. In my head, there was this plan. And the plan was move back to the UK, go live with my mum back in our family home. We had a nice big family home that there was lots of space because, you know, everyone's moved out. Everyone was going to look after her, Parker, and I was going to go to like the regatta, Wimbledon. I was going to go and do all the things that I could go and do and drink and have fun. And it was my 30th and I was going to Ibiza with all the girls and I was going to smash my business and grow it even more because my team in the UK were huge. There was this plan and this plan did not involve having another baby. And I was like, okay, well, let's not get too excited. We'll go have a scan. So we had a scan in Oz and they said that the heartbeat was lower than what they expected it to be. And he basically, this doctor basically said to me, like, don't get your hopes up. And I thought, oh, okay. Well, we might lose this one then. We'll also go to America in 3 weeks. We're moving back to the UK, then going to America because the company I worked for was flying us over there. I was speaking on stage and I was like, wow, I'm to America. We're going to get so drunk. We're going to party. I was like, no, now I'm in my first trimester. So I'm just going to be fucking tired all the time. I was like, yay for me. And I was already getting a bump. It was already like, I was already noticing it. 3 days after we landed, my mum said, I've sold the house. We're moving to Devon. We're moving 3 hours down south. And I was like,
you just moved your entire life back. Wow.
Yeah. And I knew mum had the house up for sale, but she had it up for like a crazy amount of money. And I was like, no one's going to buy that. And they literally had a cash offer. And I was like,
oh my God.
Oh. And at the time I was like, oh, okay. This is like the second thing that's not going to plan because we were going to live there for like a year or so until we like got our money together and decided where we're going to live and do all that stuff. And I was like, oh, okay. Right. So now I've got to go and find somewhere to live. I've got to go and rent somewhere. Neither me and Scott have a job, so no one's going to let us rent from them. Anyway, we ended up finding this like ground floor flat, tiny, tiny flat near town for a stupid amount a month. They let me in. It was like a private renter, and we managed to just, I basically begged them and I was like, look, this is my wages from Australia. Here's what it is in pounds. You know, I can cover this. And Scott got like his mate to write him, this is awful, I hope they don't listen to this, a letter of reference to say that he worked for them, because we were going to be homeless otherwise. Mm. We could not move down to Devon. Like, it was not an option. Mm. And for me, that was the first trigger, like proper trigger of my prenatal depression, without realizing what was going on. And now, after doing a lot of work, I realized it was my safety blanket was ripped underneath me at the time where I needed security, and I needed something to be like, it's okay, everything's going to be fine. So we moved into this flat. I had a one-year-old who was wild, like wildly spirited, that child. We were in a ground floor flat with no garden. Or it did have a garden, but it was an open plan garden that all the flats shared, and either side were busy roads. And being one, she doesn't come back. Like, if you let her out, she's like, see ya. Hi, I'm off. And so she just would escape. So I spent a lot of my time cooped up in this flat, trying to manage like being tired and being pregnant with having her. And things started to spiral in my head quite quickly, in the sense of like, I could not cope with what we had going on and the thought of having a baby at the same time. When I found out I was pregnant, I was toying with not keeping the baby, but I knew that my husband would never, I guess he would support it. Looking back, he would have supported it. But at the time, I was like, there's no way. I felt like it wasn't an option for me. I felt like, nope, you've done it now. Like, you've just got to live with it. But everything was going wrong. And wrong as in, like, it's not my plan. Like, I had this plan and everything was not going right. We went struggling for money, but we were, like, constantly, like, scrounging for it. I was obviously trying to run my business in network marketing, which was like up and down all the time. And I never spoke to anybody about the thoughts in my head, because they were so, I felt like so many people would judge me or shame me, or like, how dare you think these things when there's people out there who can't have children? Because I know how social media is, I thought, and the way that I sort of get through my thoughts and things is normally speaking them out on my stories on Instagram and talking to other people. But I felt like I couldn't do that. And it got to the point where I was going to my scans hoping that I couldn't hear a heartbeat. It got to that point, because then I was like, I don't have to make the decision then. That decision is all made for me. But you would hear a heartbeat. And I remember looking, there was this one day I remember looking at the midwife, and she's like, oh, good, strong heartbeat. And I was like, oh, okay. And she twigged then.
Mm.
She's like, are you all right? And I was like, no. Not really. And I ended up just sort of like bottling and like losing it with her. And she was sort of like, I think you have prenatal depression. And I was like, what? And I was like, yeah, maybe. And my options were like antidepressants, which I was like, nope, I don't need to go on those. I don't want to do that. Or go to this thing called talking therapies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I knew about talking therapies because a few of my friends had been there. And I thought, unless that person thinks exactly the same as me and has been through it, There's no frigging way I'm sitting there talking to someone who has not physically been through this about how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
So I declined the offer of both help. And I was like, no, this is just how I'm feeling right now. And I'll get through it. I'll work out how to get through it. And it will just happen. And it will be fine. I spoke to my husband a bit about it, but I guess for me, I was like, what the hell is he going to think if I tell him what I hope happens when I go to my appointment? Like, he's going to be like,
yeah,
you know, I was like, I don't know how to say it. And I remember one day I was bawling my eyes out in bed. I was just done. Like, I physically in my head couldn't see how I was going to cope with these two kids and a business and everything else that was going on. And he came in and he was like, "You okay?" And I blurted it all out. And he goes, "You'll be all right."
Nice. Yeah.
Because he didn't know what to say. Yeah. And how would he? Because he's a man and he doesn't go through all of these things. And he goes off to work every single day and he goes to the pub after work on a Friday and he comes home and I've got dinner and blah, blah, blah. He doesn't know what it's like to have a now 18-month-old needing my attention all the time, climbing all over me, not understanding why I couldn't do all these things, not understanding why mummy's sad all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke to my mum quite a bit about it after a while when I finally sort of realised what was going on. And I spoke to a friend, but there wasn't help. It was just more like, "You'll be all right. You'll be fine once the baby's here." I'm like, well, let's hope. Otherwise, yeah, it's going to be a little bit awkward. And yeah, I had a pregnancy where I didn't take bump pictures. I didn't feel a connection to the baby. I wasn't like, "Oh my God, I'm pregnant and I'm so excited." I was just like, "Here we go again." And I had to, another thing that really was difficult was I had to fight the NHS to have a cesarean.
Right.
They were like, "No, you can have a natural." I was like, "It's less than 2 years since I had my first by a C-section. And they told me that I could not deliver naturally. Like, don't bother trying because your pelvis," I don't know what the medical, but they were like, "Your pelvis isn't, it's not moving, mate. It's not pushing anything out. So it has to come out that way." And I remember bawling my eyes out in an appointment. I was 34 weeks and they were like, "Oh, we're still just not sure." And I was like, "My body, my choice. How dare you not give me the right to have the baby how I want to have a baby? In Australia, I could have elected a C-section straight away if I wanted to." And I remember talking to a friend who worked for the NHS and she said, "They're under so much strain right now with so many people electing for C-sections. They're basically saying, like, no, you can't have it unless you really need it." And I was like, "But I really need it. Like, yeah, I've been told, don't bother trying to have a natural one." And it turned out that a doctor put down that I needed to have a C-section because of my Crohn's. And I was like, that's got nothing to do with it. It's the fact that, like, a baby only came back out there like 18 months ago and because it didn't work properly. So that was like, that was quite a stressful part of my pregnancy. Otherwise, like, I never had seasickness. I never had morning sickness. I didn't have a bump. People wouldn't know I was pregnant. Yeah. I'm so blessed and grateful to have two really easy pregnancies. When I was told because of my Crohn's that I would have to be heavily supplemented through both pregnancies or any pregnancy and probably have my children or my baby on supplements because my body didn't absorb things. So to be able to have that was amazing. And I was really proud of that, but it was a bit of a struggle here for that part. But the actual C-section for Bella was elected. All planned. It was like, right, 6:30 on Thursday morning, you're going in and, you know, you're the first person, excuse me, and you're going to have the baby and, you know, you'll be back out by this time. And I got someone to look after Parker and My C-section took 2.5 hours.
Wow.
Because they found loads of complications from my first C-section where, like, basically from what I understand, a lot of things got a bit sticky and stuck together. Mm, there was a lot of burning. Yeah, there was a lot of burning and a lot of things going on, which I said to my husband, I said, do you remember when I told you when we just had Parker that I rolled over and felt like all my organs were moving? I was like, maybe that's why, because I didn't put them in properly. but that was 2.5 hours. So Scott got to hold the baby, got to hold Bella, which again, I was like, put baby on me. Clean me up, like,
yeah,
stitch me back up again, and you know, then I'll have baby and we'll do all of that stuff. That was quite a traumatic surgery. However, within 12 hours they were like, fine, out of bed, walk around, have a get, go and get yourself a biscuit. I was like, I didn't move for 4 days in Oz, like, what? They're like, yep, come on, up a get, you're going home tomorrow. And I was like, what? And I was like, and I was like, it was my second. So I was like, yeah, that's fine. I know how to, you know, I know how to recover from a C-section now. Drink a can of Coke, walk around a lot, fart a lot, and you're fine. Like, that is literally how to recover from a C-section. Get all that gas out and you won't be in any pain. So I was like, okay, like, fine. The recovery from Bella, so much easier than the recovery from Parker, even though the surgery was more difficult. And I breastfed Bella. I found it so easy. I found it so natural. I was like, yeah, I can do this. This is really good. And I breastfed her, I think, for about 4 or 5 months, mixed feeding. I guess I just probably just found it easy. So I didn't have to go up and make bottles and deal with the other child at the same time. I had a bond with her straight away. Interestingly, where with Parker, it took me 10 weeks until I really felt a bond with her. So even though I had prenatal depression, I felt a bond with Bella quicker. And the first couple of months, she didn't sleep as well as Parker because she had a bit of reflux. The formulas here aren't as amazing as the formulas in Australia. So we weren't as lucky to have the amazing organic formula that we had Parker on. But then lockdown happened. Mm. And that broke me, I think, because someone who already felt incredibly trapped, having two really young kids, was then trapped in their house and not being able to go anywhere. And formula shortages and food shortages and petrol shortages. That's when the postnatal depression started. So I think when I had Bella, I did feel like, oh, I'm fine. Everything's okay. Oh, I'm over it. Like, phew, yeah. Everyone was right. I will get over it. But I didn't. And I feel like the first year, so we hit, so Bella was born in October 2019. We went into lockdown March 2020. So which was like 5 months. That then a year after that. So we were in lockdown for a really long time here. And I couldn't come and visit my mum because my mum's husband had a lung disease. So they were pretty much in their own lockdown. I couldn't go and see anybody. And for a year, I feel like I was treading water. And I don't really remember a lot of 2020, which is weird. Like, I remember like, oh, it was really nice. And I sat in the garden a lot. And I look back at, and I was literally just having a conversation with my husband the other day, and I was looking back at pictures of Bella, and I was like, I don't even remember this child. Like, I don't, when did she go from that to that? Like, and I think I had her, but she was just there. Like, she'd be put in the bouncer, she'd be fed, she'd be left in the bouncer, left in her pram, she was just sort of there while I was trying to deal with a toddler, not having any support. Hubby was at work. I wasn't allowed to leave the house. I couldn't even go to the shops because double buggies at work in the UK. Our shops are too small. Our bloody pavements are too small. I had a double buggy and it kept going into the road. So I was like, not doing that. Parker was 18 months, 2 years old. She did not understand hold on to a pram. So I never left. And it just really spiraled then. And I could see that nothing was going very well during that. But no one was doing well in lockdown.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, no one's doing well. It's fine. But now I look back and I think, so I don't feel like I have postnatal depression now, but I think you go through seasons, and where I'm at now is like guilt stage, massive guilt stage. So massively. And I treat my kids differently. And any parent that says they don't is lying, but I 100% treat my kids differently. I pander to Bella. I wrap her in cotton wool because I think when you get older, I hope she never knows that her mummy didn't want her.
Yeah.
It's really heavy.
Yeah. And it's now dealing with living with that. And then during my pregnancy, I was really healthy when I had Parker, but because of how I was feeling when I was pregnant with Bella, I didn't watch what I ate. I drank loads of fizzy drinks. I drank loads of energy drinks. I just didn't care. And so when she was born, she had like a bit of reflux and she had all these things. I thought, oh my God, that's my fault. Like I gave that to her. So I wrap her in cotton wool, I think, because of that. And then with lockdown, she's not had the same start to life as Parker did, who was like bloody coming to house parties until 2 a.m. with us when she was like 2 months old. Because we were like, yeah, like this is what Aussies do. Like this is super fun. I was not drinking, by the way. But Bella, so now Bella is 2.5 years old. And in December, I had to quit my job to look after her full time because she basically ticks every box of an autistic girl, child, but no doctor will help me because she's too young.
Right.
So they won't diagnose until she's 4. She's 2.5. She doesn't talk. She has anger issues. She doesn't like people. She gets extremely overwhelmed in busy situations. She eats very bland food. She's very OCD. She does rituals, sorts of things. And again, I'm dealing with this guilt that maybe I could have done more in lockdown if I wasn't feeling the way I was feeling. So I quit my job in December because I said to my husband, she could go to school and still not be talking, or she could, you know, however she is. And like, what if she's bullied or what if she's picked on at school? And I didn't do everything I could to prepare her for the world.
Yeah.
So I said to him, one of us needs to quit our job and focus on her because I'm not having her go to school without having the same start that everybody, or at least having the same chances that all the other kids have had. And he can't work from home because he's a landscape gardener. And I knew that I had the powers to be able to start my own business again. And so I said to him, I'm going to quit my job. So I actually went back to corporate world during lockdown. So February 2020, as part of getting off the hamster wheel. So I said to my husband, I've got to get out of the house. I've got to get away from these kids. I cannot be here. I need to go and be me for a little bit. I need to just go and I need to not run my own business and be stressed about money all the time. I need to know what income is coming in every month. I need to be able to get in my car and go and stop for a coffee and play loud music. Like, I hadn't done that at all, ever. I needed to be able to go to the toilet whenever I wanted to go to the toilet. I wanted to be able to go out and go and have lunch if I wanted to go and have lunch. But I wanted to physically talk to other human beings because I'd spent a year and a half having therapy on a screen or like talking to people on a screen, doing business on a screen, doing business on my phone. And I was like, I'm so done with it. And I landed this like literally dream job, marketing director for a brand new UK fitness company. I was like, yes, this is going to be amazing. This is going to be the best. And it was until being a mum was used against me and having 6 weeks of back-to-back sickness with the kids where I had to work from home and juggle them pretty much led me to a breakdown. And it was there was like comments made to me that, you know, my kids get in the way of my work, which they did not. I was working like 12-hour days easy, but you have to be a mum first. And I just said to my husband, I was like, do you know what, fuck this. Like, the corporate world is still not designed for women who want to be wildly successful, but also be a present parent, but not also a present parent, but a parent that can afford to put food on the table. Because actually what was about to happen is our childcare was slightly changing for Bella. She was going to, I was working from home 2 days a week. My husband had Fridays off. Parker was at daycare because she got funding. So in the UK, you get funding once they're over three. So you get a lot of help towards the costs of childcare. Bella got nothing, so you got no help. So it would have been about £1,000 a month, which is nearly someone's full-time wage. But a friend of mine's mum was looking after her, which was amazing. It was brilliant. And she was starting to really come out of her shell, but she couldn't look after her in the new year. And I couldn't find anybody to look after her. And I could not put her into a daycare. She just would not be ready for that. So I did. So I quit my job. And my plan was to do network marketing again full time. That went out the window by the 3rd of January because the company had shut down. And I had to go like, shit. Like, at the end of this month is my last paycheck for this job. Like, what the hell am I going to do? Like, what am I good at? And that's when I decided to just launch my own marketing agency and support other mums who are in business with their marketing so they could focus on like the core business and being a mum. And I'll focus on their marketing and being a mum and actually work with other mums who get that it's really wild and that it's fine if we're doing a Zoom call and there's a child on my shoulder or, you know, they're having a fight in the background or something like that. And I knew that I wanted to not work with corporate men because they didn't get it. I worked with a pretty male team and they all had kids, but I used to say to them, I'm like, you're a dad and I'm a mum. And there's a difference in that. But yeah. Sorry, that's definitely gone on.
No, that was great. Yeah. That's, yeah, full on story, very heavy story. Lots of things to unpack there. But I know I heard you say in there that you were doing therapy, Zoom therapy. Was that for your postnatal depression or was this something that you'd just done for a long time?
That was more just like life coaching, having someone to talk to. So I did that in Australia. So I had a life coach in Australia anyway, more so like, not because I wasn't necessarily going through anything, but just like, I need to talk to someone who's just going to help me unpack my brain a little bit. And so I just had sessions with her, but we never really unpacked the post and prenatal depression. The pre and postnatal depression. It was sort of more career focused. I, because of lockdown, couldn't go and get any help.
Yeah. So did you ever get help, or you just dealt with it yourself?
Just dealt with it. Postnatal depression, I found it easier to talk to people about because it didn't feel as dark as the pre, but also more people spoke about postnatal depression.
Yeah.
No one ever spoke about prenatal depression. So I'd, you know, read someone's story online and be like, oh my God, that really resonates with me. And I'd just drop them a message and be like, hey, I feel like this. And I, because I was in network marketing, I had this massive team. Like I had a team of about 1,000 people and a lot of them knew what I was going, like I would be really open with them on how I was. So they almost were my therapy. They were my support network. But again, I craved this physical connection, this human, I need to speak to someone. You know, I need a cup of tea and a sit down and a cuddle. I didn't get that.
Yeah.
So I think it just all went in waves. Sometimes I'd feel really good. Sometimes not so much. I didn't eat great. Like I knew when I was eating well, I was feeling better. Yeah. So I knew everything that I needed to do, but sometimes I just didn't do it. Yeah. And I knew I was spiraling. And it was like, I said to myself, I remember doing a talk about it. I was on this hamster wheel of like, I've got no money. I cannot get a job. I can't get out the house. I can't have a good career. Like I was on that hamster wheel all day, every day. And I literally in my head, I imagine myself as a hamster, a hamster wheel, and then just throwing myself off it. Like literally I was like, right, throw yourself off it, change that narrative. Right, you can do something about it. What do you want to do? You want to get out of the house, go get a job. So go get a job. And I did go do that. And that, I think, broke that cycle. I think had I not done that, I don't know where it would have gone down. But it was a Band-Aid. It wasn't a fix. It just helped me breathe a little bit. And I feel like now I'm in the recovery stage of dealing with it all, and things come up and things are thrown at us, and definitely as energy prices are rising, petrol prices have risen, housing prices have risen, we don't have a house, like we are homeless, we had to move out of our home because it just got too expensive. So we live with my husband's mum. This is quite a small house for a lot of us, but it is what it is. So I guess at the moment there's this feeling of like, God, I'm such a failure. Like, look what we had in Australia. And it was my decision to come home. So there's a lot of like pressure and guilt and a lot riding on shoulders. But I know that this is the start of the up. Yeah. Like I'm at that point now where I'm like, I've been through the worst and I don't think I won't go back down that hole. But now it's recovery, and it's now trying not to feel guilty looking at Bella every day and not treating her differently to Parker, because that's not fair and that's only going to, you know, affect them when they're older. But it's like, what do you do?
Yeah.
How do you get around that?
Yeah.
With your antenatal care, like when you had your appointments and stuff, you know, were they asking you questions? Like, were they giving you that opportunity to speak up besides that one? Was it a midwife that was doing it? Was it a sonographer, yeah, wasn't it? Was still doing your scan?
No, so in the UK, your midwives do everything.
Oh, wow, that's badass.
So, yeah, the midwife does the scan.
Right.
So she picked that bit up.
Yeah.
And that was it. So I had one visit from a midwife after having Bella. She took my stitches out. And then we had a three-month visit. And that was it. No one called me, came to see me until 3 weeks ago. 4 weeks ago, someone came to see me, interestingly, because social services had called them to come see me because Bella actually fell down the stairs. I was in the toilet, going to the toilet, and Bella decided to fall down the stairs. And she is very capable of doing those stairs and has been for a very long time. But I didn't see what happened, and she busted her lip, but I didn't know if she hit her head obviously I called the ambulance, and they reported me to social services.
Wow.
And he basically in the ambulance told me that he had to do an assessment whether or not I pushed her down the stairs or not. So that was a trigger, definitely a trigger again for like, that was my fault. Oh my God, I've hurt her again. Like all these things I've done to her before she was even born. Now, like I turn my back for 1 second, she falls down the stairs. My husband was so mad that it had happened as well. He just didn't understand what had gone on. She was absolutely fine, thankfully. But yeah, social services rang me and were like, we need to come and do an assessment of your house. And we're going to call the health visitor. And I was like, yeah, call the health visitor because no one's come to see me since she was 3 months old. So, you know, I'd like a bit of a checkup. And she came and everything was fine. And she saw that it was an accident. But they don't ask how you are. They just focus on the kid.
It's just like just three words too. Yeah. Like, how are you? You know, like.
Yeah. No, it's how is she? How is she? Is she all right?
It's always focused like, on the child.
Always focus on the child.
Was there ever a point that you got a diagnosis of postnatal depression or?
Post, but pre. It is written in my notes and that I refuse medication and talking therapies.
Right.
So, and that's it. They're like, that's it, that's done. If I wanted to go and seek help, I'd have to pay for it and go find it somewhere. And there was a point that I was looking for a specialist in that area, but the cost was just too much to do at the time, and there was no support. It's funny in the UK, like something I didn't see in Australia was there was no like class in Australia. Everyone was just treated, I felt, everyone was just treated quite equally. In the UK, you've got upper, middle and lower class. And if you're lower, you're looked after by the government. If you're upper class, you're fine. You've got enough money. And if you're middle class, you're fucked because no one helps you.
Right.
And this is where we are. We earn too much to get support. We don't earn enough to live, which means you don't get a lot of other support. Obviously, we get the NHS support and, you know, going to the hospital and all that kind of stuff. But if you want other support, which therapy is still holistic here, no. So I have a friend that does Reiki and she does that for me, which I found was really, really helpful, but not more so just making me feel better in that moment, not a forward therapy.
Yeah.
I don't know what type of help is out there because I guess it hasn't been offered, but I haven't found it.
Mm-hmm. If you had a friend that came to you and said, you know, I feel like I'm suffering, what would you say to them? Like what words do you wish you had? And like what advice could you give to someone who knows someone that's kind of going through this as well? Like, you know, the types of language that you can use so someone can open up, you know, instead of like, you'll be right. Like, you'll be right.
Yeah.
We'll be right when the baby comes.
For me, I wish I just had someone who was like, just tell me everything you're feeling and you're getting no judgment from me.
Yeah.
That's all I wanted. I didn't want anyone to tell me how to fix it because I knew they couldn't. I just needed to get what was in my head out of my head to be like, I journaled a lot because that was the only place that I could, it was the only thing I could tell.
Yeah.
Like a book was the only thing that wasn't going to judge me. So if a friend or if someone listening to this thinks that their friend is going through it, just say to them, like, if you ever feel down or if you ever feel like you need to get something off your chest, out your head, know that my ears are here and there's never any judgment.
Yeah.
And I'm just here to listen.
Yeah.
Don't say everything will be all right.
Yeah. Can't believe you. You'll be right. I think people sometimes just don't know what to say. Yeah. And the more we talk about these topics, then people can kind of understand a bit more and be like, yeah, right. Like I need to approach this better. Like if it comes to me, because so many people just wouldn't know how to react. So then they say, you'll be right.
Yeah. And also like, I'm quite a strong woman. Like people know me as very strong. And if I ever ask people like, how would you describe me? They'd say confident, strong, mm-hmm. like go-getter, we'll go get everything. So no one, I didn't see it coming. I remember me and Scott were talking about placenta encapsulation in Australia. And we were like, oh, it helps with like, you know, reducing the signs of postnatal depression. But I was like, I'm not going to get that. Like, that's for people who don't love their babies. Mm-hmm. That's literally what I thought it was. Yeah. I thought it was that. But actually for me, postnatal was like, I love this kid so fucking much, but I felt so guilty. And I treated her different. And I just couldn't juggle them so young and so close together. Like, it's got nothing to do with you not loving them. It's you just are struggling to cope with doing absolutely everything.
Yeah. What would be something that you would say to Parker or to Bella when they grow up and they potentially hear a conversation about postnatal depression, or they hear a conversation where you said, like you said, that you don't want her to feel like she wasn't wanted? What is it like? Is there a conversation in your head that you think you would have with them when they're old enough to make them understand?
Yeah. And I think I would be 100% honest with them. And for me, it's the way I would explain it to Bella would be, oh, I can hear her crying now. typical. The way I would explain it to her is like, you know, mommy and daddy had moved country and lots of things were changing, and mommy was just struggling to deal with everything. Was just struggling. Like, your sister was a nightmare. she was really young. I was like, and I would just be honest with her, and I'd explain to her what lockdown was and how we couldn't get out anywhere. Yeah, I think I'd just be honest with them.
Yeah.
Honestly,
it'd be a hard conversation to have, I think, as they got older.
You'd want them to obviously, if they're, you know, having children down on the track, you'd love for them to open up to you if they were having these feelings during their pregnancy.
Yeah, I'm just going to go and get her, if you don't mind.
Okay. Yeah.
1 second, I can hear her.
Do we have a little guest?
We do have a little guest. I'm gonna get
it. Oh, hi, Baba.
Oh, sweetie. She gets like, she has really weak gag reflexes. So when she coughs too much,
and she cries. Yeah.
Yeah. Aww. And she cries. She doesn't sleep through the night still.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a kid that slept through the night from like 3 months old, and a kid that's nearly three and still doesn't sleep through.
No. Everyone is individual, I suppose. We all make up different parts of the world.
But again, like, not having all that sleep definitely doesn't help for things.
Yeah,
and you know, it gets really hard giving Bella to anybody overnight.
Yeah,
because she doesn't sleep. And I think one of your questions or something someone asked was, what kind of support do you wish you had that you didn't get? All right, sweetie. It's all right. And I think for me, it was a support from the people that no one asked if they could help. I always had to ask for help, which I don't like doing, because I was like, it's my kids. I chose to do this. I should just get on with it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's your kids. It's not their kids. Like, just get on with it. But I wish more people, when I was pregnant with Bella, I wish more people were like, hey, should I take Parker out for the day? Or can we just take around the park and give you, you know, 5 minutes to yourself? Or even my husband, like, he does a hell of a lot. You know, and they're still like, I wish I could just have a bit more time off. And then obviously when Bella was born, and then we went into lockdown, obviously no one could have them. But afterwards, you know, I was raised by my nan.
Mm.
My nan raised me because my parents worked. And I guess I wish, selfishly, I wish I had that support. I wish, because when you get family or close friends to look after them, you sort of don't feel so guilty.
Yeah.
But, you know, with people you don't really know, it can become a bit difficult. But yeah, I wish just a few more people would turn up at the door and be like, hey, I'll have her overnight.
Yeah.
I think I've been without Bella maybe two or three nights and that's it. Yeah. I booked a hotel in like November in lockdown. I said to my husband, I'm going to go and stay in a hotel for the weekend because I need a break. Mm. I'm just going to sleep and have a bath. And that is literally all I did. I slept and had a bath and ate some nice dinner.
Yeah. Sometimes it's all you need.
And a bit of work.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like my friends go on holiday and go away for weekends together with their husbands and, you know, they get to give their children to their parents or, you know, they have that support. And it's not like I do have the support in a way, but I just wish, you know, me and my husband would love to go away on holiday and just not think about the kids.
Mm-hmm.
But where they are so close in age, they are a handful together. And it's sort of like, I don't have the parent like I had my nan.
Yeah.
Like my nan was the most incredible person. Could have handled 100 kids at once.
Yeah.
We don't have that. And not that that's any fault of either of our parents, but I think that would have made a massive difference.
Yeah.
And I think without making my mum feel guilty, if she hadn't have moved away and she was there, I don't think I would have felt the way that I did through lockdown.
Yeah.
Because it's so different when you've got your mum. And like I'm here now at hers. And as soon as I turn up, I instantly feel like, oh.
Yeah, relief.
Oh, I've got my mum. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas it goes quite a long time without feeling that.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story with us and being so vulnerable. We are so honored to have had this space for you to be able to talk about this experience. And I know that someone listening is going to, a lot of people listening are going to take a lot from this and really, really appreciate your honesty and vulnerability with us today.
Thank you. No, thank you so much for giving me the platform to share. That's the first time I've really openly spoken about prenatal depression before.
Yeah. And if any of our listeners do want to reach out to you and talk to you about this or talk to you about anything in general, where can they find you?
Instagram is the best place. At The Real Luce Hawkins is where you can find me. And honestly, if anything that I've said has resonated with you, there's always a no judgment ear.
Oh, thank you.
But you can always just reach out.
Thank you so much.
So much. Yeah. And we'll put you in the show notes as well, okay?
Thank you.
All right, thank guys. You. We're sending you love, life and laughter always and hoping Bella has a good night's sleep.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Bella.
Thanks for sleep again. Little monkey.
Aww.
Always centre of attention.
All right. We'll see you guys next week.
See you next week, guys. Bye.
Bye.